Go
All right.
for it.
Hello, friends. It's that time. Welcome to a happier hour. Hello, and welcome to the Beacon Group's noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Courtney, and I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. God, oh, it's on the script too. Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. Okay. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and the number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time. You'll see the little, oops, wrong hand, the little clock right there for you, Amanda, when it goes up. Amanda is our speaker today, and we will then split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure that your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout rooms will end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. I've asked my friend Lee to please read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Go ahead, Lee. Oh, you're muted, my friend. There you go.
Okay, I'm Lee and I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to read the steps here. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe a power greater than ourselves would restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and our and to other human beings the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, oh, I don't know what that's about. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure themselves or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholics and to practice these steps in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Lee. Appreciate you. Today, we'll hear a talk on step two. Step two, again, is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Please give a warm welcome to Amanda F. from somewhere in the world. I'm afraid I don't know, but you'll tell.
Castle Rock, Colorado.
Colorado.
All right. Hi, everybody. Colorado. Go ahead, Amanda. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, I'm Amanda. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really glad to be here and to see so many people on this. This is great. I want to thank Kirsten for asking me to speak. And as you can see, I am in beautiful Colorado. I have the green trees behind me, and it's been a rough winter and spring, and even summer was like rainy and cold, and it's not supposed to be like that here. It's supposed to be like this, like a lot. So we're finally, I think, getting our nice weather. So step two, so I've been sober since July 30th, 2006. I got sober in New York. So I know Kirsten. Our husbands we're firefighters together and are friends. So I was 26 years old. I grew up in Oceanside, New York, the South Shore of Long Island. Spent 35 years there before we moved here. We're like 30 miles south of Denver, just for you guys to get an idea of where I am. I have a sponsor. I went, in the beginning. So I celebrated 17 years in July, and I think I went maybe a year without a sponsor, like right in the beginning. Like she moved, and then I just didn't get one. I couldn't find one. I don't even know, whatever. I didn't have one. I was like maybe 1 or 2 years sober at that point. Lucky I made it through. But I've never shied away. I've never left AA, like ever. And I have not gone out to test the waters again. I've trusted the people who have. I trust that it's not fun out there. I have a sponsee right now who's literally dying. And she just, I don't know what's going on, but it's very sad to see. My brother died from this disease 5 years ago. My cousin died, my closest cousin to me died 4 months before him. My aunt died a couple years before that. Mental illness, addiction runs through my life, my family, like hardcore. My parents are not alcoholic, but it's all, the whole family's riddled with it. They have my mom definitely has the isms, you know? So I got sober and 26 years old, and 8 months into sobriety, I had a boyfriend who died. He overdosed. And I didn't know that for a while. I thought it was a diabetic coma. Actually, I think it was both. And I
You got muted, Amanda.
Oh, okay. There I am.
It was only for a second.
Go ahead. So, at that point I was on step eight, and, I had my sponsor who I still had, my first sponsor who took me through the work. She, had a husband who died a couple of years before that. So it was really no coincidence, right? Why we're drawn to people. And I said to her, what do I do? And she said, keep going with your steps. Like, just keep going, just jump in, just keep going. And I said, okay. And I was desperate. And I was really kind of brought to my knees at that point. I've had 3 hardcore emotional bottoms in sobriety that I've not had to drink over, like hardcore, like on the floor, like howling in pain in therapy, this and that, you know, doubling down on my meetings and my steps and all that. So at that point, that was my first one, when Mike died, when I was 8 months sober. And I had never thought about suicide really while I was out there. I'm too much of like a masochist. Like, I really like to suffer. Like, I would rather just suffer than get it over with, you know? And, but at that point, the thought of suicide like ran through my head. I was in so much pain. I'd never had anybody that close to me die before. And in such a sudden way, it really shook me. And, I realized I hadn't done I had done my third step, but like, I realized that I really hadn't given it over because I was still, you know, trying to control, like thinking like he should still be here, you know, stuff like that. You know, what could I have done differently? You know, maybe if he stayed over that night, it wouldn't have happened, it, you know, all this kind of stuff. And if I'm struggling with one step, I know that I need to go back to before it. So really I had to go back to step two. And, you know, when I got here and they told me that I had a mental illness, that alcoholism is a mental illness, I didn't really like that. I didn't, you know, I was kind of like, no, I'm a party girl. I just like to drink. And when I drink, I can't stop. You know, I'm just having fun. I knew I had the allergy. I actually knew that since I was like 15 years old. Like, I remember telling my mom, like, I feel like something happens in my brain, like something changes, you know, she would say, you know, your face changes, like everything about you changes. You're like a whole different person. So I kind of knew, and I could tell by the time I was, you know, right before a couple of years before I stopped drinking, I could tell you from like one drink to the next, or sip, really. It was like, okay, here it comes, you know, and like my alter ego, I named her Judy, and it was just like, here comes Judy, Judy's coming out, you know, and it was just this crazy thing that went on bodily, you know, but the mental obsession, that's the mental illness part of this. That's the insanity part. That's when I came to believe, you know, that I was, that God could, higher power could restore my sanity. You know, that was what proved it to me, that I was actually insane and that I needed a higher power to help me get sane, because I couldn't do it on myself, right? Like, how many times, I'm sure we've all, I mean, tried to stop drinking on our own. Like, I tried so many times to stop drinking. Okay, I'm never going to do it again. Never going to do it again, right? But by Wednesday, Thursday, you know, it's, you know, I was a weekend warrior for a long time. It would come in, you know, in the middle of the week towards the end. But, you know, it was, you know, this crazy hamster wheel of regret, you know, feeling like crap. And then by Wednesday, I'm planning, you know, Thursday, I'm all excited. And Friday, I'm out. Monday, I'm feeling like crap again. Right. So it was this insanity, this wheel. And for me, my insanity really showed up in this, like, you know, there were probably a handful of times I said, I'm only going to have one. You know, we say that a lot in the book. Like, we read it in the book. Like, that's the obsession that, like, we're just going to have one and we're going to be okay. I kind of knew that something bad was probably going to happen. I just hoped it wasn't going to be too bad. Like, that was my level of insanity. The complete lack of self-worth and self-respect and self-love, right? Because call it, you know, wants goodness for me and wants me to feel about myself the same way that it, she, he, they would ever feel about me. And so when I was, you know, brought to my knees when Mike died, you know, I remembered the stuff that I did when I did step two with my sponsor. And what she did was, so we lived on the South Shore of Long Island. We lived near the beach, and she actually lived in Long Beach, it's called, right on the South Shore. And I would go down there and do our work together every week. I'd go with my big book. And one day when we were doing, you know, step three, it was actually step three, I think we were at, but this is it was step two. It definitely was step two. And we were sitting on the boardwalk and we were watching the tide, watching the water, watching the ocean and the waves. And she said, do you make the waves come in and out? Do you control the tide? And I never really thought I did, you know, that was like a bit extreme, but like, I had a connection to something greater than myself through that experience, through nature, through the fact that I cannot control those waves. I cannot control the sun going up and down and the side of the moon that we see, right? Like, I can't, that's not in my control. So when I was growing up, I had this, you know, I don't know what, there's a name for them. Somebody told me recently, but there's a name for people who just go to church like on holidays. And that's how it was. My mom would try and take us like on random Sundays, and me and my brother were just like having no part of it. So she stopped. And I, you know, I believed in God. I believed there was something there, but I had no personal relationship with it. And that's the point of the steps, I was told by my first sponsor. The point of going through these steps is to bring you to a personal relationship with a higher power that is going to be your defense against the drink. And, you know, at night, and when I was a kid, I'd lay in my bed and I'd say the Hail Mary, the Our Father, God bless my family and friends, good night, you know, and that was it. That was my range of prayer. There was no connection to it. It was something probably I felt I had to do, to be accepted or whatever, you know, it's just what your family does. When you're a kid, you do what they do. But there was never any sort of relationship going on there. And then when I, you know, was in AA, came to AA and step two was put to me that way, you know, and that I could create this personal relationship with the God that I understand, whatever it is that feels connected like deep within me. And that, you know, came through nature at first. That's really what, how I came to believe was like, there is something much bigger going on out there. It's changed through the years. But, you know, no, putting it to me that I had a mental illness, I knew that I needed to use this thing to restore me to sanity. And I've been insane, like I said, multiple times in recovery, you know, and those times typically have come after huge upheavals, usually due to grief, huge emotional upheavals, like my brother dying or Mike dying, or moving to Colorado was huge for me. 35 years being a New Yorker, and I moved here, and it was just a crazy culture shock. And the meetings and stuff were just different. And they were functioning in very much small town sort of AA. And the town was like 60,000 people. Like, they were not small town anymore. So me and my husband and some other people got together and started a nonprofit and opened up a clubhouse here. Because I was in such a bad space that I knew I needed to do something for my sobriety. I was scared for my sobriety when I moved here. And I slowly, over that year, the first year of being here, I did become insane once again. I could not handle my emotions, could not handle my emotional nature. And if I let that go, if I just kept going with that and didn't address it and do the work, I would drink again. Like, that's just like, how much insanity can I handle in here before I break? There's only so much a human brain and heart can handle, right? So I have to work these steps all the time. So I used the book Came to Believe, the red, I don't know if it's red anymore. I think maybe it's blue now. And that was really helpful for me in step two, because I could read all of the different ideas, conceptions from people of all different nationalities and religions and just all different walks of life. And that was really good to sort of get my take the pressure off myself to believe in a God that I was taught was, you know, a God in, when I was a kid. That kind of opened it up for me. And it was like, all right, you know, you're allowed to make this thing whatever you want it to be, right? And that really helped me to open up more, to be less resistant to the higher power idea, and to believe that it's going to do for me what I can't do for myself. And, you know, so it's just so important, the higher power. I mean, like, we, you know, it's the three, unity, service, and recovery, the three, you know, legs of the triangle. So we need all of it. I need all of it. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I remember my sponsor had said, you know, that your higher power is your defense. That's it. Like, friends are great. Fellowship is great. You know, all that, you need all of it. And sometimes I hear higher power through you guys, you know, so it's, you know, it's all necessary. But I remember she said to me once, I used to work in Manhattan, and I'd go through the tunnel, and there was this one part of the tunnel where there was no service, no cell service. And, you know, I'm looking around next to me, and there's a whole bunch of, you know, business people on their way home from work, you know, drinking beers and stuff. And, you know, she said to me, you know, what happens if you're in that tunnel and you, that's looking good to you. That beer is looking good. Somebody's got an extra, you know, and you can't get me, and you can't get your, you know, your sober peeps, and you've got nothing, just you. What are you going to do? That's why higher power is so important, because sometimes we're just going to be left with ourselves. I remember after my brother died, I went back to New York, and I had to like do the, I had to go like pick up his suit, you know, from the dry cleaner. I had to go to CVS and print the pictures, and, you know, I had to, and I did it all. It was raining. It was just a very depressing, miserable day. And I'm driving around doing all this stuff. And I was sitting in a parking lot, and the bar that I used to work at was literally like a mile down the road that we used to drink at together. And the thought ran through my head that if I go there and drink, I might feel closer to him. You know, I might be able to like rekindle some kind of memories. And I started crying. Like, that scared the crap out of me. Like, I have a very healthy fear of relapse. Like, it really scares me. I've seen enough people die here to know that it kills, you know. And you know, like Mike dying at 8 months, there was other people who died too very early in my recovery. And I feel like, you know, they say some people have to die for others to live. I think that was a really good lesson for me in early recovery. Like, hey, this shit is serious. Like, you don't mess around with this. Right. So, you know, I did text somebody, when I was sitting there in the car crying, thinking about maybe going to that bar, but I prayed. And I put on some music that speaks to me, that has saved me a couple of times. It's a song that I put on after I went to my first meeting, and I sat in the car after and cried and just knew it was over. And so that thought of, okay, put the song on, or that thought of, okay, text that person, that's my God, that's my higher power telling me what to do, speaking to me. So, you know, that's why it was so important for me to really get this personal relationship going. And I was about, I'd say, I don't even know, I was about 4 or 5 years sober, maybe four, maybe three. I was in therapy. I was engaged to be married. And I'm in therapy, and my therapist, who's also was in the program, she told me this concept. She calls it big G and little G. And big G is God, whatever, out there, right? And little G is the one that lives inside me. And it took another 5 years and a lot of pain to really get me to be able to bring that concept of that big G that's out there and move it inside. Again, that was after I moved to Colorado. I was 9 years sober. I was not meditating. I was not doing a 10th step. I just wasn't. I was in a lot of pain. And my sponsor here said, well, you're doing a proper 10 and 11. And I was like, no, you know, I'm doing the spot check thing. And I'm, you know, I try meditating, but like my brain goes and blah, blah, blah. So I would try. It wasn't like I didn't try, but it never really stuck. I didn't have like a dedicated practice. And I was so desperate at that point after we moved that I started doing that. And that's when it happened for me. That's when that outer God that's somewhere separate from me, I allowed it to come into my heart and my mind, my body, my soul, my spirit, and just do for me what I can't do for myself, right? Like I couldn't think my way or write my way or run my way. I'm a runner. I couldn't outrun my shadow, right? I couldn't get rid of those dark parts without asking for it, being willing and leaning on something much greater than me that's going to do it for me. Like I knew if this thing can help me get sober, if this thing can take away my alcoholism or arrest it on a daily basis, then it can work for anything else, right? So every time I go back into those like insane kind of moments and insane parts of my life, because, you know, AA doesn't promise me that life is going to be sunshine and rainbows. In fact, my life has not been sunshine and rainbows in recovery. At times it has, and at times it's really sucked, to be honest. And all that AA promises is that if I don't drink that first drink, I'm not going to get drunk. So life is going to happen whether I drink or not, right? So I may as well not, because then I have a fighting chance, you know? And I need those dark times are going to come. They've come. I'm 17 years sober. I've had three crazy emotional bottoms where I, you know, I didn't know if I was going to make it through. And it's because my higher power has always showed up for me in those moments of insanity. So yes, my alcoholism is a mental illness. That is ultimately step two. That's what we're talking about, that it is, you know, relieving us of that bondage of self. That starts that prayer, but it's hand in hand, two and three. And, it's going to do everything for me. Like I said, if it could get rid of my alcoholism, it's going to pull me out of that dark pit of despair, you know, that life is going to throw at me, you know, and I'm going to have more. I'm only 43 years old. I'm going to have more, right? Like life is just going to keep coming, you know, the good and the bad, you know, or I don't really think there's anything bad. I think they're all opportunities for growth. Sometimes really terrible, you know, really challenging, difficult opportunities for growth, but they all are. And the way that I move through that is by leaning on my higher power. You know, what convinced me that this stuff works was when I was about a week sober, and I was at, or maybe like 5 days, I don't even know, maybe like 5 days. Anyway, I was at a meeting in my home group, and I was introduced to somebody, and he said to me, what are you doing tomorrow morning at 6:30 in the morning? And I was still working in Manhattan at the time. I said, I'm sleeping, you know, it's the weekend, I'm sleeping. And he's like, no, you're going to get up and you're going to drive down to Long Beach, which was like a 20-minute drive. I was living in Merrick, Long Island at the time. And you're going to meet me at this meeting. And I was like, okay. So I just did what I was told. Like, I was just so desperate. I just did what I was told to do. So get up, in the morning. I go down there, go down into this like dank, you know, humid, gross, you know, church basement on a beach. And there's like 100 people in there in this like little room. And everybody was talking and they were drinking coffee and they were happy and they were laughing and they were smiling. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, I was at an anniversary the night before and I saw little kids running around and I saw some balloons and I saw flowers on the table. And I saw a cake and I was like, these people are like happy. Like, what is this? And then the next morning I go to this meeting and they're like hooting and hollering. They're like having like a really good time at 6:30 in the morning, sober. And it, I just sat there like dumbfounded, like, holy cow. And I just trusted and I just believed that they, that if this could work for them, maybe it could work for me. And I just believed in the power of AA, like really, really early on. And I was told, you want what I have, do what I do, you know? And that's just what I did. I just didn't fight it. I was just, I guess my fear of death outweighed my fear of what I might find out in recovery. Right. And had I known all I was going to find out and all I was going to go through and, you know, the depths of my soul that I've been to, you know, I'm not so sure I would have had the courage to do it if I would have known that. Luckily, God reveals to me what I need as time goes on, you know, more and more is revealed, peeling of the onion, all that kind of stuff. And every time it gets really hard, that's what I have to go back to. I go back to my higher power, to my spirituality. You know, I meditate in I call it the meditation cave. It's this little room in my house downstairs. And whenever I'm, you know, struggling, or, I mean, I try to go there in there, you know, every day, but especially if I'm struggling with just some sort of emotional issue. Like at this point, the drink problem has been removed. It was removed very, very early on for me. Got through my steps in the first year. I started sponsoring people and that's sort of when it really took off. But I now struggle. It's not, you know, with the drink. It's maybe other ways I can hurt myself, right? Like I feel like I'm probably not going to pick up alcohol. Never say never, but I can hurt myself in many, many different ways. I can overdo anything, right? I'm an extreme type of person. And overdoing anything to any capacity is going to hurt me, even if it's seemingly good for me, right? Like if I get like obsessed with exercise, or I get obsessed with what I'm eating, or I get, you know, it takes time away from people in my life. It takes my attention. It's almost like another distraction, getting too caught up in like anything. And I, you know, whether we justify it as healthy or not. So I go back again to my higher power, because when I'm slipping into those, you know, I heard somebody say the other day in a meeting, if I don't make my bed 2 days in a row, I know I'm going down a slippery slope. And that is true. That is very, very, very true for me. You know, like I looked at my bed before it was unmade. I'm like, should I make it? No, I don't need to make it. I'm like, yeah, make it. You got to make it. You know, it's like simple things like that, that just, you know, help shore up so many parts of my recovery, especially my self-worth. You know, I'm worth having a nice bed to get into at night. You know, I'm more, you know, it's like sounds so simple and silly, but it's these little things that I could see I'm getting off the beam. I'm off the track. And it happens a lot. I mean, not to the point where I'm, you know, on the floor, like I said, but like just randomly, like my brain, you know, I take a lot of supplements for like mood stuff and, you know, stuff like that. Hormones, you know, I'm 43. I'm sure the women in here can relate. Not fun going through the whole perimenopausal thing. And I don't even want to know what's coming, but I take a lot of stuff to manage my mood, and my body. I do a lot. I have to do a lot. I have like a lot of like a regimen, you know, I have to eat right. I have to exercise. I have to go to meetings. I have to pray. I have to talk to my sponsor. I have to have sponsees that are in the work. I always like to have at least that I'm taking one that I'm taking through the book. I have three right now that are going through the book. So I'm really, it's such a correlation. Like, and I don't know why I forget this, but that's always the answer for me, right? Like the more I'm in the program and in recovery and not on the periphery, not just showing up to meetings, not just, you know, I don't know, dropping in once a week, you know, if I'm entrenched, if I'm really like in it, that's when I feel the best. And that is my higher power doing for me what I can't do for myself. Those are the moments I feel the most sane. Those are the moments that I'm working step two, that I'm, that I can see it and I know it and I believe it, that God is doing for me, again, just what I can't do for myself. Because left to my own devices, man, I wake up in the morning not very happy. I don't know why. I'm a big dreamer. I dream a lot. I have a lot of bad dreams. And then they're usually not like very good dreams. And I wake up usually a little bit not right. And again, go in the meditation cave, do my deal and connect, make some kind of conscious contact with this higher power that just makes me feel like I'm okay, that I am just as worthy as the good for to have the good stuff in life as you are. Or as I always talk about Mary across the street. There really is no Mary across the street, but in my mind, there's a Mary across the street who is like good. Like she's solid. She's golden. Like life is good. Meanwhile, probably not. We all have our struggles, right? But if she deserves the good stuff in life, why don't I, right? That's my insanity talking to me, that you need to suffer. You know, when my brother died, I suffered a lot of survivor's guilt. You know, I was 12 years sober at the time. And he just could never, I don't know, I don't even want to use the word get it, but he never stayed long enough, I guess, is what I should say, for the miracle to happen. He'd get to like step four and he'd be out, you know? And I remember at his funeral, I was like, why him and not me? You know, why did I get this gift? And he just couldn't, you know, maybe he had another mental illness. I'm not really sure. Maybe it's just a soul path, you know, who am I to say? And I remember when, you know, we had tried to help him for so long. And one of my sponsors, I love this woman back in New York, my sponsor, Carol, she's like my heart. She said to me, I was like, so, you know, Jeremy's suffering. He's got a daughter. Like he's really hitting the bottom. I mean, this kid's bottom just went deeper and deeper. I mean, you just think it can't get any worse. It can. And she said, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to pray for him to get sober. She said, no, you're not. You're going to pray for the acceptance of God's will for him. And for his, I've come to believe that it's not only God's will. I think our higher selves and our souls and our spirits also make a lot of decisions about things that go on in our lives, but that is his path. And who am I to say that he belongs here? And that took some time for me to really become comfortable with that idea. But the truth is, I don't know what's best for anybody's soul and spirit. You know, I don't even know what's best for mine. Who am I to say what's best for somebody else, right? Maybe he could do more good work from up there than from here, right? So all that thinking, those thought patterns are what come to me when I believe that this higher power is going to restore me to sanity, whether I'm drinking or I'm sober. And I'm in these crazy thoughts. For me, it's control, right? I mean, I don't think I'm alone. I'm pretty sure most of us suffer with control issues. So when I can sense that I'm going down that path, that I think I know what's right for you, and I think I know what that they should be doing, and I think I know what the president should be doing, and I think I know what this should be doing, and I think I know how to run the world. That's when I know that I'm not living a spiritually centered, sober life, right? Like anybody could be abstinent, you know, I'm sober, you know, I live the principles, I live the steps, I live, they're kind of the design for living, you know, I can't tell you like exactly what step I'm doing at any given time, but I'm working some step. It's just like my thought process at this point. And I work them all so that I'm not back in that insanity. Right. So that I'm like, okay. Like my relationships are okay. Like I'm not fighting with anybody right now. It's great. I love that. Every now and then I think I'm like, do I have any issues with anybody right now? And I'm like, no, I don't. And that's like, hallelujah. You know, like, cause there's always something, right? But if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm going to stay sane enough that I'm not going to have to go back and like rework like a hardcore set of steps. Like I don't know how you guys do it, but in New York, I never really heard like you go keep going through the steps. Like I went through the steps and like then I just live them, like my design for living. I'll do a fourth step when stuff comes up and I'll just work my 10, you know, at night, in the morning, and then I'll meditate, whatever, and I'll sponsor people. So I'm always doing it. But here, it's very common that people work a whole set of steps, and then they may even get a new sponsor and then do a whole other set of steps. And they're constantly work in the, reading the book and doing the steps, like literally doing them, like formally. So I thought that was like, that was kind of interesting. I did it once around my marriage when my marriage hit the skids too in recovery. And things are better now. So this stuff works. I keep doing it because I'm too afraid not to. And I hope you all will too. So thanks. I'm Amanda. I'm an alcoholic. And I appreciate you all being here today.
Amanda, thank you. Thank you so much. That was beautiful. Lots to think about. When I start ordering DoorDash, that's when I know I'm going off the rails. That's my sign. Okay, AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. We are observing the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo, and you should now see our Venmo information in the chat. Our Venmo address is beacon-group. Please take a moment to make a contribution if you can. If you do not have a Venmo account but would like to send a contribution through the mail, please message the leader, me, and I will supply our address. All our contributions support AA's General Service Office. Thank you in advance for your generosity. If you are looking for a home group, we would love to have you. Our business meetings for this noon meeting are held virtually on the third Monday of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, following our regular meeting. The Beacon Group's overall business meetings are both in person and on Zoom on the third Wednesday of the month at 9:15 p.m. after their open speaker meeting. To sign up for membership and to be on the email list, please visit our website, which is posted in the chat. Our website has a lot of great information as well as recordings of our meetings. We will now have AA announcements. Are there any AA announcements? Are there any announcements for the good of AA? If so, please raise your hand in the chat if possible. Any announcements for the good of AA? Okay. Thanks to everyone who has agreed to run a breakout room today. Please keep in mind to give equal time to everyone who wishes to share. Do not crosstalk or offer feedback. Please take a moment to make sure that your audio is muted and wait to be called upon. In a moment, you will be connected to your breakout room. You will automatically rejoin the meeting at the end of small group discussion at 12:54. Have fun, everyone. We're not going anywhere, are we? Kim, my friend, are we going into breakout rooms or are we just going to...